It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM, WRIR, and online at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
That's a very important distinction, because once that loan ages out, and that's one of the other things that's very important about the difference between a federal student loan and a private student loan, federal student loans do not have a statute of limitations. There is none. If you don't pay, they can chase you for a very long time. With private student loans, there is a statute of limitations.
Consumer law attorney Jason Crumbine explains private student loans, your legal rights about private student loans, and what to do if you are contacted by a debt collector trying to collect a private student loan. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn about the 40 million mistakes in credit reports and the 1 out of 5 odds that your credit report has such a mistake. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 199, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. We live in an age where much of what goes on in our daily lives is monitored, collected, and sold to interested parties. Our driving records, our medical history, our internet traffic, and most importantly, our credit information. A mistake on your credit report can cost you money. It can increase the interest you pay on loans, prevent you from getting a mortgage or buying a car, landing a job, or getting a security clearance. It's not uncommon. A new government study released last month by the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, indicates as many as 40 million Americans have a mistake on their credit report. 20 million have significant mistakes, and those mistakes can be nearly impossible to get removed from your record. Consumer credit reporting is a $4 billion a year industry dominated by three large companies, Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. They keep files on 200 million Americans and traffic in our financial reputations. The reliability of the industry was questioned in an 8-year-long study released by the FTC last month. The study found some pretty troubling information. 1 out of 5 Americans has an error on their credit report, and 1 out of 10 has an error on their credit report that might lower their credit score. The Federal Fair Credit Reporting Act says that if you believe there's a mistake, you can go to the credit bureau and they have an obligation to do a reasonable investigation. 8 million people a year file disputes about their credit report. There's a toll-free number you can call, which is likely to connect you to someone on a faraway continent. Beside the toll-free number, they also give you a post office address where you can send a letter and documents supporting your claim. In each case, it's extremely unlikely that anyone with the authority to resolve your dispute will ever actually see it. If you challenge a credit report and mail your information to a post office box in the United States, the dispute will likely be investigated in India or the Philippines or South America. Much of what's known about the inner workings of the consumer credit agencies comes out of lawsuits filed by Virginia consumer protection attorney Len Bennett, who has subpoenaed company records and deposed employees and executives. According to Bennett, quote, without qualification, the dispute procedures used by the credit reporting agencies completely failed to comply with the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Courts have found that. The Federal Trade Commission has found that. It's not even a close call. End of quote. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org. We're here once again with Jason Crumbine at Crumbine Consumer Legal Services in the near west end of Henrico County, and we are continuing our conversation about student loans. Last week we spoke about federal student loans, and this week we will be talking about private student loans. Welcome back to the show, Jason.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your being here.
Well, last week you told us the difference between federal student loans and private student loans, but for those who weren't listening last week, tell us again, what's the difference and how does a student borrower even tell what type of loan they have?
The difference is that a federal student loan is actually managed and controlled by the federal government. And the way you tell whether your loan is a federal student loan or a private student loan is you go to the National Student Loan Database Service website, nslds.ed.gov. And you log in, and once again, it takes a couple of minutes to log in and figure out all the pieces, and you have to have a personal identifier number and your social security number and some other information about how to log in. If your loan is on the NSLDS website, there is a 99% probability that it is a federal student loan, and it'll tell you what kind of student loan and all that kind of stuff. If your loan is not there, there's a 99% probability that it is a private student loan.
So we learned last week that a federal student loan, once you are separated from the educational institution, either you graduate or you stop attending school, you've got a grace period of 6 to 9 months before repayment has to begin. Is that also true for the private student loan?
That will depend on the note. The loan documents that apply with private student loans will specify exactly what the rules are, how long you have, if at all, before payments begin. And it's very important to know the difference, because with a federal student loan, the federal regulations will control when you need to make that payment. Whereas with the private student loans, the loan documents will say that.
So let's assume you have a private student loan. You're governed by the terms of the student loan, the note that you signed. What are your payment options? Do you have any?
Very few payment options. Technically, your options really are pay according to the terms of the note or don't pay. Now, of course, if you don't pay, then you almost immediately become in default. Now, this is different from the federal student loans. With the federal student loans, there is a period of time when you fail to make a payment that you are not in default, but you're actually just delinquent. And you can get caught up, you can work out deals, you can do all sorts of things like that. With a private student loan, theoretically, once you miss that first payment, you are in default. And only a full cure of the payments under the terms of the note would cure any default. And that's a very important distinction, because once that loan ages out, and that's one of the other things that's very important about the difference between a federal student loan and a private student loan, federal student loans do not have a statute of limitations. There is none. If you don't pay, they can chase you for a very long time. With private student loans, there is a statute of limitations. Now, people sometimes ask, what's the statute of limitations on a private student loan? And the answer there is, it depends. There are three factors to ask. One is, where did you go to school, and what is the statute of limitations in that state? Number two, does the loan have in it specific terms to identify what the statute of limitations is? For example, if your loan is governed by a New York law, your loan says this loan will be governed by New York law, it's possible that the statute of limitations is governed by New York law as far as how long the statute of limitations is, which is a longer statute of limitations. And the third thing is, where do you live now? Now, most of your listeners obviously are going to be in Virginia, and the Virginia statute of limitations is something that's relatively simple and straightforward. We can say that it is most likely a 5-year statute of limitations on a student loan if it's a Virginia loan with a Virginia choice of law at a Virginia school. But it becomes more complicated if it's a Virginia resident who went to school in Pennsylvania with a New York loan.
So other than a student borrower waiting and hoping that the statute of limitations runs and they would have a defense to a collection lawsuit, what should a student borrower who has a private student loan do when that loan goes bad, when they can't make the payments, when they're in default?
The first thing they should do is they should spend the time to educate themselves on dealing with defaulted debt in general. Because the rules that apply to defaulted student loans that are private loans apply to private student loans. And that's an important factor because you have the right to demand validation to make sure that they are looking for the right person, that they're demanding the correct amount of money, that they are doing all the things that they're supposed to do, that they are complying with all the necessary regulations, and they are required to put all the pieces together and make things correct.
So is the strategy for dealing with a student loan more or less the same as dealing with, let's say, a car loan or a private loan or
credit
something
card?
Of that nature?
Yes, absolutely. It's very similar to dealing with a car loan or a credit card or anything like that. And you just sort of go through the steps, and there are all sorts of things. Now, here's the thing about this. Most, but not all, student loan lenders don't sue. But even if they do sue, they only have standard remedies for a judgment. And if they don't sue, they don't have any real remedy. The effect of a debt collector demanding payment on a private student loan is the same as a collector calling on a credit card, a payday loan, a defaulted car loan, anything like that. If you don't pay, I'll call back tomorrow. And you can make them stop.
And how would you make them stop?
Number one, demand validation. Number two, you can write them a letter and demand that they cease communications with you. Now, that's important that you do it in writing and that you do it in a manner that is trackable so you can prove when it is that you sent it and when it is that they received it. And at that point, they're no longer permitted to communicate with you. You can also hire an attorney and do any negotiations that you wish to through the attorney. Now, student loan negotiations on private student loans is much more difficult, but sometimes debt collectors who are dealing with an attorney are more flexible and they're more willing and able to do a variety of things with the student loan, knowing that there is a lawyer on the other end, particularly one who is able to navigate the entire rules of how to deal with a student loan.
Why are private student loans even made? I mean, car loans obviously are what we call secured loans, and if you don't pay on the car loan, then in theory and usually in practice, your car can be repossessed. But obviously, a student loan, a private student loan, they can't repossess your education. It is essentially an unsecured loan. So why are these loans even made in the first place?
Not all people qualify for the government loans, and they don't qualify for the appropriate federal grants. Sometimes people don't have enough money to pay for all the other related stuff, for the books and for the apartment and all the other necessary living expenses. Those are common things that require the use of a private student loan. Also, sometimes the government doesn't have all of the money for student loans, and there are limits to how much they are willing to loan for a government student loan. So you then have to then resort to a private student loan, which are not limited to any real limits.
So what is the worst case scenario if a private student loan goes bad?
They sue you, and they then begin the process of regular standard collection activities. They can garnish bank accounts, they can garnish wages, they can attach other property. But once again, they're limited only to state collection actions subject to the rules of that state. So, for example, if they're not allowed to do something in Virginia, they're not allowed to do that here.
So what about bankruptcy of a private student loan? Is that an option? I know last week we talked about bankrupting federal student loans, and you dispelled the myth that you can never do it. You just said it's extremely difficult, and there are a lot of factors that have to be looked into. What about these private student loans?
Very similar. The rules of student loan discharge in bankruptcy are exactly the same as they are in a government student loan. Now, there are some additional pieces to factor in, because once again, it's subject to the statute of limitations defense. If they don't show up and do the process, you can actually object to their claim that money is owed in a bankruptcy, and this is primarily used in a Chapter 13 bankruptcy. If they show up and they say, we want our money in a Chapter 13, and you say the statute of limitations has expired, and the judge agrees that the statute of limitations has expired, then as a matter of law, no money is owed. The statutory denial of the discharge for a student loan in bankruptcy is irrelevant because the debt is no longer legally a debt. There is similarly the situation of somebody who believes that they have paid their loan off. The lender files a claim with the bankruptcy court and says, we would like our $20,000, $50,000, whatever. The borrower then goes to the bankruptcy court and says, but I made payments for 10 years, 5 years, however long it is. I made all of my payments. I no longer owe any more money. If they win that argument, once again, the judge has determined no money is owed. It is irrelevant whether or not there is a discharge. The judge has decided that no money was owed when the bankruptcy was filed, and that is an important factor.
And the reason no money was owed when the bankruptcy was filed was because enough time had elapsed to permit the statute of limitations to run?
Exactly. Or perhaps the person had actually paid the loan, or there was some other reason why the student loan under state law would no longer be an enforceable loan because it would be subject to all of the defenses of a regular contract, a credit card, a car loan, a whatever.
Well, let's assume that the lender of this private student loan within the statute of limitations period filed a lawsuit and got a judgment.
Okay.
And let's assume then that the student borrower files bankruptcy. What happens at that point to that alleged obligation to repay the student loan?
At that point then, and it does not matter whether the loan is a federal student loan or a private student loan, the automatic stay of bankruptcy then applies. And that is a circumstance where perhaps the creative use of bankruptcy is an effective solution. While a person is in a bankruptcy, making some sort of payment through the bankruptcy court, the student loan lender, whether it's private or federal, is prohibited by the bankruptcy code from collecting any payments from you directly. They must go through the bankruptcy court.
And that's because of the automatic stay?
That's correct.
Okay, so you're in bankruptcy. You've got this student loan. What lead us through the process. What happens next?
At the conclusion of the bankruptcy, of course, private student loans are subject to the same rules of discharge as are involving federal student loans. With a student loan, you may want to litigate whether or not the student loan should be discharged. Once again, the test is a very difficult test. It's possible, but it's not impossible. you go through the process and you ask for it to be discharged. If it's denied discharge, then one of the available options is you can possibly resume payments. Now, they may not be very happy about what they're getting for payments, but you may be able to make a deal with them. Or, if necessary, you can file some other form of bankruptcy, another bankruptcy, a Chapter 13 or something like that, and repay. I understand that particularly in places like California, one of the things that is extremely popular right now is repeated Chapter 13 filings, which is permitted. It is allowed to file successive Chapter 13s because, once again, you're making payments to your creditors. You make payments during the time of the Chapter 13 to the Chapter 13 trustee, who then distributes the money. The majority of it, once again, goes to the student lender. And at the end, if it's necessary, you can file a new Chapter 13, and you just keep on going down the road. I understand for people who have particularly large loans, perhaps hundreds of thousands of dollars, as is necessary for example, a medical student or a law student, you might file 3, 4, 5 Chapter 13s to get down the road so that you can deal with the financial issue of the student loan and begin making enough money that you can actually make a real payment, and at that point then you can do some sort of a deal with the student lender.
Which I guess answers the question I had in my mind, which is how can you do the one Chapter 13 after another when you have to wait 2 years between Chapter 13s? But as I understand, a 13 will usually last longer than 2 years, so you can just roll over from one Chapter 13 to another, to another, to another?
Absolutely. The rule on Chapter 13 filings is 2 years from the date of last filing of a Chapter 13. A typical Chapter 13 will last at least 3 years. So if the last filing was more than 2 years ago, and of course you had to last for 3 years, you're eligible to file a new Chapter 13. Where it gets a little bit interesting is where the last bankruptcy was, for example, a Chapter 7. If the last bankruptcy was a Chapter 7, then I believe they need to wait at least 4 years in order to obtain a new discharge in the new Chapter 13. But once again, now you're on the road from Chapter 13 to Chapter 13 if necessary. Or maybe you want to go along and something new has happened and you do a Chapter 7 at that point.
And finally, how large a problem is private student loan debt? I mean, I always thought that almost every student loan was a federal student loan, and I was surprised to learn that there even are private student loans, let alone that they are in such numbers.
It's hard for me to really know exactly how much is federal student loans versus private student loans. What I can tell you for sure is that I know that the student loan problem is a $1 trillion problem. That's 1,000 billions of dollars. And that's a number that is difficult for most people to even comprehend, much less fully enable the understanding of that quantity of debt. That's a lot of money.
Well, thank you very much. We have been talking with Jason Crumbine at Crumbine Consumer Legal Services in the near west end of Henrico County, finishing up our 2 weeks talking about student loan debt. Last week, we spoke about federal student loan debt. This week, we talked about private student loan debt. Thanks for coming back to the show, Jason.
Thank you very much for letting me come and talk to you.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website, This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Money judgments don't collect themselves and are collected only by following strict legal procedures. Join us next week when private attorney Mike Bellotto talks about the collections process in Virginia and explains the rights of creditors as well as the protections for debtors in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on August 17, 2011. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.